individuals charged with running various parts of the department who simply don't seem to care about the product, the parolee that they're producing. Maybe it's burnout or frustration. I've heard that those terms mentioned up here this morning. But we found them to be simply unmovable, no matter how much logic we throw at them to correct these problems. It's simply time for a complete change while we have this unique and painful window of opportunity that we're in today. Sacramento County Inspector General Lee Dean, one of my former colleagues in the Sheriff's Department, wrote both some very compelling reasons along with some solid proposals for change in this realignment document, which Senator Hancock has a copy of. Lee has indicated that he's very willing to speak or meet with anyone who is interested in these answers to the dilemma. I think that you should hold a hearing, and it's already been announced that you will, on CDCR, which would set the stage for change. We know that a number of service providers, ex-offenders, teachers, and civic leaders would gladly come forward to help you sort out this dilemma. We believe that we have to separate out parole from CDCR in some sort of a firewall way. Ladies and gentlemen, I've worked in jails. I know that incarceration and rehabilitation are like oil and water. They just don't mix. Unless and until we get the jailers, who are called turnkeys, bulls, old terms, but they're descriptive of what their mindset is. They're good at what they do, locking people away and keeping the rest of the community safe. But we need to get them out of training and preparation for release. We'll still turn out parolees who will recidivate unless we do that, unless we take them out of that. We'll still get parolees who will recidivate at the high percentages that they are today. Over 70% of the parolees go back to prison within 3 years. Along with other members of our group, we want to offer ourselves to be supportive in any way. We're essentially making two proposals, and this winds it up. First, we're asking that the legislature mandate a specific percentage reduction in recidivism on an annual basis. And secondly, and to go along with that, we're asking that they also impose a creation of an inside-outside training program instead of relying on CDCR's continual assertions that they're taking care of it. Fact of the matter is, they aren't. What this means is that the legislature creates a benchmark that CDCR must reach. Now, this forces CDCR's hand, and the creation of the inside-outside programming will give us the platform we need to start vocational training on a statewide scale, to force the department to achieve a recidivism reduction. You withhold funding. If they don't, and you can create an independent committee to verify their claims, there has to be some penalty for their failures. Now, there are those who say that we can't do that, we can't withhold money. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've worked in this building 6 years. Nothing is beyond our reach. I know that nothing is carved in stone. Even if it's in legislation, it can be changed. And so with that, I conclude my remarks and once again offer our continued help to Senator Hancock. And if we could ever get some Republicans in here in this group, perhaps I could communicate with them too. Thank you.
We'll work on that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there other speakers in public comment? Fine. While you're coming up, I'd just like to say the withholding money seems problematic to me, because if it's something that the institution doesn't value now, withholding money isn't going to make them value it more. I think one of our tasks is to really explain to the public and to the people working in the institution and to the legislature why, in the long run, we save money and we increase public safety in our community if we prepare people to go back into the community because they are going there. But I just did want to make a comment on the percentage recidivism mandate. You know, this is what we do to our public schools. We have a mandate. They improve performance every single year, and if for 3 years in a row they don't, they're put in receivership and all kinds of bad things happen to them. It has always struck me as not being entirely fair if you don't fund them to achieve the goals that you've set. But it's interesting. Educational performance has gone up in California. So
it's called the results of accountability.
It's interesting. Accountability probably is important. Thank you. Another speaker from the public.
Yes, good morning. My name is John Dannenberg, Senator. I'm at the other end of the spectrum. I'm a lifer parolee. I just happened to be visiting in Sacramento today on other business and came by.
Welcome to the committee.
Perfect timing,
yeah.
As happenstance would have it. There is a statistic that is not very well advertised, and that is that the relatively few persons who've gotten out as lifer parolees have a remarkably low recidivism rate. It's down around 1 or 2%, and that it does not involve even violent crimes, as I'm told. There's a pattern here. The pattern is that the lifers who are seeking to gain parole are working very hard to gain an education while they're in prison. And Ms. Lewin's project at San Quentin was one that I was very familiar with. To me, there's a very unusual correlation between the education that lifers seek in order to improve themselves in order to be able to gain parole, and the fact that their parole rate at 1 or 2% is simply the other end of the spectrum from the 70% that everybody here is quoting. There's got to be a message in there somewhere. And the message is that there is another factor that comes in, and that's called what I call the connection factor. One can go to a class, one can be exposed to an education, but what one really needs to come out of the prison system whole is a feeling of self-respect, of self-dependence. And that comes from a combination of learning to meet people. In often cases, these are the instructors, the ones who are told don't develop any personal relationships. But there is a personal relationship, even at a distance. And this becomes the wherewithal where the prisoner, is able to break the mold that he comes from, off of a gang background, a low education background, and instead find that he or she can gain the self-respect that they need to stand on their own two feet when they get out. The education system is tantamount for that to occur. But there is a factor, and I'll close with this. Ms. Lewin pointed out that she finds herself fighting the system to be able to gain a foothold, to be able to do what she wants to do. And sadly, there's a competitive element here. The system is designed for self-promulgation. The system is designed that more prisoners equals more money equals a better lifestyle. And education and the attempt to gain recidivism cuts are in competition with that. There are maybe 30, 35,000 correctional officers in the state. Each one has a post order. The post order states what they shall do with their job position. Not one of those post orders says anything about correcting. It's not in their job description. And education is even further away from the concept of just correcting. And I will state that my own belief is that the problem lies with the legislature. They've never defined the term corrections. If you can't define it, you can't measure it, you can't incentivize it. And Senator Hancock, I heard you use the term incentivize several times today. I know it's of concern to you, but I think that there's a fundamental problem that the legislature needs to define corrections in a way that allows a measure to be made so that an incentive can be placed with a goal, and that goal, as the last speaker made, was reduced recidivism.
Thank you. I think that your point is very well taken, and it is something we need to work on, and that's really one of the reasons we're having hearings like this, to try to build a base of shared information, because we have, unfortunately, many legislators who are afraid of being not tough enough on crime. And it really took a Republican governor to add corrections to the title at all. Now we need to define it and make it real. I agree with you, and thank you very, very much. Senator Lou and I, you're half an hour late. Yeah, we are. So if there are no more comments from the public, let me again thank you. We have had this hearing because we believe that adding corrections to the title is extremely important for saving money for our taxpayers, making our communities safer, and respecting the quality of life in our communities and in our prisons. And we are going to try to do as much as we can, even in an era of no money, with the things that can be done with positive leadership and proper management and the interface between those things. And thank you all very, very much for hearing.